This is KBSX 91.5. I'm Samantha Wright. We're talking about the role stories play in our culture and why we tell stories. When StoryCorps came to Idaho, people from all over signed up to take part. More than 130 were recorded. Many more people would have loved a chance to sit down for 40 minutes with a friend or loved one and record their story for posterity. We wondered how we got to this point, sitting across from each other, telling stories and recording them. John Zeiker studies how things like stories evolve. He chairs the anthropology department at Boise State. Zeiker says storytelling goes back possibly to when we learned to use fire.
500,000 years ago is the current evidence for how long people have been using fire. It could be longer than that. So Homo erectus times. You can imagine ancient humans sitting around the hearth fire recounting their day or family histories that have some particular meanings. So through history, I think people tended to be more embedded in the storytelling, and the art of storytelling was probably more dispersed throughout the population. Whereas, you know, as we sort of have developed through the industrial age, and we specialize in our careers and we specialize in our skills and abilities, I think, yeah, we have professional storytellers, basically. So we hire people to tell us stories. People maybe don't feel that their own stories are being relayed in a way that they probably were going back in time.
And StoryCorps is a chance for people to tell their own stories in their own way.
Definitely. And it's on one side, that is just an incredibly valuable thing for people to be able to do. On the other side, you know, recording the story to some extent takes it out of what we might think of as the living culture. And it becomes memorialized or museified, potentially. And so going into the future, there's a possibility, and I'm talking in the distant future, people might not understand the metaphors. They might not understand the context of those stories because it has become static in a way. On the other hand, the ability for people to access those stories is a really big advantage. So there are really some great things about StoryCorps, you know, in terms of access and in terms of, you know, allowing people to record stories that they might not be able to relay otherwise to a larger audience.
I've been listening to folks for several weeks now telling their stories, very personal, very poignant stories, and sharing them with, in effect, the world, in some cases. Why do they do it? What's the motivation to open up your soul and tell what might otherwise be embarrassing or not flattering or emotional? What's the motivation?
A lot of the stories that I've heard on StoryCorps, they seem to have an underlying message of personal sacrifice. And I think that message is really important, especially in today's society, for encouraging participation in the common good. So it's not all about me and self. It's about doing things for others, doing things for family in some of the stories, doing things for people that you're completely unrelated to in the larger society, and even doing things for other species. These are messages that I think link into some of the important themes that we see in a lot of the larger stories, myths, origin, tales, religions that, you know, we see all around the world. Those stories are encouraging people, and in a lot of contexts, those people are the descendants of the people who thought up the stories or were relaying the stories from their ancestors. And so the aim of the stories is to encourage cooperation and sacrifice amongst people who are traditionally were related, but and now we live in much larger societies. And so getting people to cooperate is kind of a challenge.
So I'm going to tell you my story in the hopes that you'll learn something from it?
Right, exactly.
You never know what's going to happen when you start listening to a StoryCorps story. You never know where the story's going to go or how it's going to end or what's going to happen with the characters. Everyone is different and everyone is just special, I guess is the way to put it.
That's really interesting. And it's very valuable, I think, for the people and for their families and for the wider public. I think there's a lot of value in that. I mean, I remember, 20 years ago, talking to my grandfather about his experiences as a pilot in World War II. And I wish that we would have recorded that. And so this would have been a perfect, you know, opportunity to record those stories. And because I don't remember a lot of the details about what he told me. I remember the general gist of it, but it'd be nice to remember some of the details.
And if you had that CD, you could have that one moment in time.
Exactly, yeah. It would be possibly something that would bring, like, his great-grandchildren together, you know, a connection that they might not have realized. It's not only for the people telling the stories, but also for the families and other people who listen to it. I think, you know, there definitely are messages in there that are important.
John Zeiker leads the anthropology department at Boise State University. He spends a lot of time analyzing stories and histories in his class called Magic, Witchcraft, and Religion. Now, Clay Morgan knows a thing or two about storytelling. Morgan teaches English at Boise State, and he co-founded Story Story Night, the monthly storytelling evening in downtown Boise. He, like many people, visited the StoryCorps recording booth this summer. Here he is describing his wildland firefighting days as a smoke jumper when one of those jumps went horribly wrong.
We had a big lightning storm come through and started lots of fires around Boise and McCall, and early in the morning we got up and had this fire call, and a bunch of us got on the old DC-3 with the door off it, and we had our jumpsuits on and parachutes, and we flew off, and beautiful-looking little fire in the Seven Devils Mountains right on the edge of the Hell's Canyon, just gorgeous. And Bob Shoemaker was my jump partner. It was small enough fire that only two of us were going to jump it. And what it was one grand fir with a spike top, like two legs sticking up, burning right between these two spires. We had a chainsaw, but the tree leaned one way and each of these heavy spires leaned opposite ways. We sawed all the way through and it didn't fall over. And so we got a wedge, a piece of wood about 8 inches long, and we figured out which way to run when it started to fall. And as we would do this and it started to go, it opened up and let air in to feed this fire inside the tree. So it just turned into this blast furnace, just going and the heat on our faces and everything. And Bob stood behind me with his hand on my shoulder because I couldn't look up. And he pounded my shoulder. And we both turned and ran. He was in front of me. We were running. And then this big shadow showed up just like a chicken hawk going after a little chicken and just went, and it just slammed me down. And I hit my...
So the tree hit you?
No, one of those spires came off. Okay. Big, heavy thing. Uh-huh. And knocked me down. And there was a log on the ground with these sticks sticking out of it, you know. Mm-hmm. I hit with my jaw on that tree, and one of those sticks went up right through here under my jaw and into my mouth, right inside my jaw. And it just crushed me, you know.
Yeah.
And I was out. And I woke up, and I look up, and Bob's laying on the ground. He got hit, too, and he's looking back over his shoulder at me, and he's got the worst look on his face. And I can't move my jaw, and I can't breathe. Hmm. And I'm just going, I can't breathe. And my vision just started closing down. And then all of a sudden, I had broken my rib. And all of a sudden, my rib muscles relaxed. And I got this big breath and took this amazing breath of air. And I had all this blood coming down on my shirt. It had missed the jugular and all of that. And Bob was sticking, you know, bandages up under me. And all the flowers, these blue and red flowers, looked ultraviolet. It's just amazing.
Eventually, Clay Morgan left his smoke jumping days behind him. Now he teaches, writes, and studies story. You probably heard a lot of tension and anticipation in Morgan's tale. Those are some of the elements of story. And here's how Morgan defines story.
A story is a simulation of human life inside the human brain. And it uses sensations to kind of elicit emotions that bring to us this sense of meaning and significance. And a story has a beginning, middle, and end, because a story is art, and art brings structure to human life. And human life can seem to be just one damn thing after another. But in a story begins for a reason and ends when that has been discovered, the reason or the meaning.
How do you captivate an audience?
The human brain is already a captive. It has been evolved to work with story. There's a set of neurons in the brain called motor neurons that tell our muscles what to do, how to walk, how to brush our teeth, everything. And a subset of those, about 20% of motor neurons, are also work as mirror neurons that mirror or imitate what we see. Like if you see a little kid fall down and you just naturally lunge for that child, or you feel that the same thing when you watch somebody else do something like shoot a basket or anything. It works when we observe things, but it also works when we're caught in a story. The great thing about a story is that it uses these mirror neurons inside that actually, you know, builds an experience, a perceived experience that the reader or the listener gets. And the other thing going on with story that the brain sets us up for is this thing called theory of mind. And I don't like that term very much, but it's what the scientists use. And it's this concept that we think that other people and other animals have intentions, that they have a mind. And we can suspect what they're up to, we can hope what they're up to, but that works in story as well, because we see a character in a story and we immediately start wondering about that character's intentions. And so these are all subconscious things that go on all the time. And in a story, it's an experience just like life. You know, we've called it the imagination, and it kind of diminishes it because we think rational thinking is better than story thinking. But story and story logic is the most powerful and the most subtle type of logic and persuasion that we have.
What makes a good story?
Quickly getting the reader or the listener to identify with the main character. Might be yourself telling a story of something that happened to you. And once you've done that, you've got him, and you shouldn't lose him. And a good story involves a degree of risk or challenge or danger. It can be psychological danger or physical danger. And so that the listener worries or is curious about what's going to happen. And it's one bad thing after another, usually in a good story, until the main character finally prevails. And to prevail, it doesn't mean the character wins all the money or wins the football game. But I've thought sometimes that a story is like the pursuit of happiness or the pursuit of meaning. And a good story leads us to a sense of meaning in our lives that we can connect with. And once you get there, the story's over.
Many of the stories on the Idaho StoryCorps show convey very strong emotions. There's love or lost. Does a good story need those emotions?
Yes. Stories use emotional logic, and a lot of people think the emotions can't be trusted. But the emotions are part of that subconscious part of our brain that makes decisions, you know, the snap of a finger in a blink's time. And then later we use our reason to make sense of that decision. If your kid asks if he can have the car all night, you say no and then come up with the reasons later. You already know it's because of this emotional logic going on. And what we have to remember about emotion is that it is real. It is really real. And little kids don't call it emotions. They call it my feelings. You hurt my feelings. And every emotion is attached to a physical feeling. Love is this amazing lightness of being. Dread is this weight on your shoulder. The emotion of disappointment is this heavy feeling of fatigue. And so we perceive through our emotions the same way we perceive physical reality through all our sensations, all our senses.
So how does a good story change us? Can a story make a change in someone's life?
I think human beings are the story-making animal. And the great thing about stories is that we can explore and experiment. We can read a novel in which a character makes a choice in his or her life. And it works for them or it doesn't work for them, and we don't have to go through that experience. However, we're so engaged in that experience, it might change us as we experience through living the story. And so, yeah, a good story does change us, and that's why we always remember those.
Do you remember a story that changed your life?
I was in South America all alone, traveling through Patagonia down in Argentina toward the tip, dusty, dusty Patagonia, on the train, getting lonelier and lonelier, staying in hotels and just feeling very sad. And I had one book. It was Hemingway's Islands in the Stream, big, thick book. And I was sitting in a movie house waiting for a movie, reading that book, and I came to the end. And I looked around and went back to page one and started it again. And reading that story so quickly again, and reading it twice, taught me more about writing than I'd learned in the last several years. And that changed my life as well. I think reading is some of the best writing you can do.
Is there a story you've always wanted to tell and that you hope to tell someday?
I've got 50 of them. You got a moment? I do. I've got stories going. Right now, I'm rewriting Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, only through the point of view of Tiny Tim instead of Scrooge, because I think that's the way it should have been written. I'm writing another story set in the 1918 flu epidemic. I'm writing another story called El Dorado Man, about a golden person in the Amazon, and scientists are trying to find him. So I've got so many stories I want to tell.
Clay Morgan teaches English at Boise State University. He's published 7 books. He was the first writer to win the Idaho Governor's Award for Excellence in the Arts. Julie Kryansek has a story to tell. She's 87 years old, and she grew up in Boise. Her father was born in Boise in 1884. She remembers a lot of history of Boise and of her family. Her daughter Donna brought her to the StoryCorps booth in Boise this summer to talk about her life. Julie says her father's mother had been a spiritualist, someone who serves as an intermediary between the living and the dead. But Julie didn't know much about what that meant. She does remember the day she found out.
When I was about 12, I think it was, I was probably making fun of spiritualists or that sort of a subject, and my dad and mother and I were in the living room on North 15th. Mother was lying on the couch, and Daddy was sitting in his chair, and I was sitting across the room from him. And I wasn't sitting, I was standing, because Daddy said, "Sit down." Very firmly he said this. He had a stool that you still have in front of his chair. And of course I sat and kept my mouth shut. And my mother said, "Vern, don't." And he said, "It's about time she knows." And I just sat there being half scared. And he put his hands out in front of him over the stool. And he held them out there. And he lifted them up. And the stool lifted up. And he set it back down. And that's all there was to it. I've had a very open mind ever since.
Julie Kryansek says she's always been a little jealous that she didn't have her father's particular talent.